The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Thursday right here in beautiful, sunny Las Vegas, Nevada, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to break down the arc that helps to explain why Miami has finally gotten their game in order. Teddy's just going to ruin Tracy McGrady. And when we get to the College Board tonight, we're going to tell you why this morning's breakfast cereal was not Special K.
So, Dave, first take on a Thursday. What did you see last night that you want to share with our viewing audience?
Something a little bit awkward. We like Bob Huggins an awful lot. One of the most honest coaches out there, one of the best coaches out there. But on yesterday's show, we had talked about the difficulties Truck Bryant was having, playing so many minutes in Big East play. From the time he went the full 45 in an overtime win over Providence, his game fell off the table. What did he do last night? Another lousy showing. 3-for-11 from the field, missed all of his three-point attempts. They got waxed by 27 at Notre Dame. But he played the whole 40 minutes. Now, is this a coach punishing his player? You're not playing well, so you know what? You're getting beat on national TV. You stay out there and take the beating. That might be counterproductive because 40 minutes was the last thing in the world Truck Bryant needed right now. There was a chance to get him off the court with 10 minutes left, get him a little bit fresher for the games that are ahead. Was it a psychological game that Huggins was playing? Boy, if it was, it was an awkward one. But it's certainly one we're going to follow up on because you know what? West Virginia is right back on the court tomorrow. So he did not give him some rest at a time when he really, really needed it. That struck out to me. What do you bring in this morning on this beautiful day, other than shirt sleeves, by the way?
Yeah, hey, and it's beautiful. I got to wear shirt sleeves, even in February. But we focus a lot on this show on correctly analyzing results. That's one of the things. It's like our MO. It's what we try to do on a daily basis. And I'm going to talk about a game last night between the Warriors and the Phoenix Suns, a game where I cashed a ticket, my clients cashed a ticket with Golden State. They won the game outright on the road as underdogs, led wire to wire. At no point during the game did Phoenix have the spread covered. The largest lead of the game, the Suns, was a two-point margin. And, of course, they were catching laying four and a half in that ballgame. So you look at the end and say, oh, Golden State, right side winner. And if you look at the box score, you're probably thinking that. Golden State shot the ball well. They hit their free throws. They hit their three-pointers. You know, they didn't turn the ball over. They didn't make a lot of mistakes. Oh, right side winner. You chalk it up and you analyze the game. Yeah, yeah. Golden State, clear choice in that one. If you watch the game, you probably came away with a very different impression. You know, the Warriors shot lights out early. They got off to a 19-point lead and then gave up that entire 19-point lead throughout the rest of the ballgame. In the fourth quarter of the contest, Phoenix dunks, layups, wide-open looks from three-point range. Golden State, basically every shot they took was a contested fall-away jumper. What happened? Well, Golden State hit a fair number of those contested fall-away jumpers. Thank you, Monta Ellis. And Phoenix, on the other hand, missed a lot of their wide-open looks. But this, my point here is basically talking about the weakness of box scores. At times, obviously, we're going to get a lot of your information from box scores. And the box score here shows something of a lie. The reality was Phoenix may well have been the right side in that ballgame. They didn't have the right result. But the more you can watch, the more games you focus on with your eyes and not concentrating on stats and numbers, that's what the betting markets do. It'll give you an edge moving forward. All right, Dave, we got a big night of showdowns on the college hardwoods tonight. And you'll note a theme running through today's show with this letter from Brian, a great way to set up that theme. Brian sent in a question, quote, "Hey guys, now that it's just about all the conference games, no, sorry, now that just about all the conference games on the schedule are revenge games, I wanted to know how much the books tended to adjust for it. Is it bigger when the favorite got upset the first time around? Are there any particular settings that you look for?" Great question, Brian. How do we answer them, Dave?
I'm going to spend the whole show answering that. It's going to be the theme of tonight, a couple of postmortems addressing specifically some college revenge situations. We wish we had more time each day so we could go into a lot of different ones that do creep up. Yeah, we look at it. The books look at it because they know they have to. They know it's one of the first things on the mind of the bettors this time of the season. How much do they adjust for it? Not as much as they used to because they can't. There are still so many people betting big money off of overall mathematical power ratings that if they adjust too far for revenge, the money sort of gets snapped back the other way. We talked about good examples on Tuesday night. You had Ohio State and Creighton, two powerful home favorites, laying double digits in revenge settings. For good parts of the day, the money was actually the other way in those games. Biggest thing, though, we've got to start with is look at that first game. Teddy was just talking about box scores. Those box scores can be a treasure trove of little fluky things that may have happened in the first game, which gives you a couple of elements. And we're going to talk about this with Wisconsin-Iowa later. The fluke can often be reversed just by the pendulums of basketball itself. If a team shoots too well or too poorly, the sport itself brings a little correction into play. But then it's the tactical ability of the coaches to adjust to those extreme results that really does make a difference.
And there's a couple of other factors to consider, but I want to answer your question in a single word. You asked how much the books tend to adjust for these revenge settings. The answer is not much. You know, the books don't adjust a lot for it. The numbers that you see, point spread-wise, are largely based on these mathematical analysis, these power rating numbers, and then the books will factor in where they think the money is going to come, maybe adjust by a half a point or a point in one direction or another, but you're not going to see significant line adjustments just based on the fact that it's a revenge setting. The other thing we have to talk about is, does the revenge actually mean anything to either of the two teams? The team that lost, if the team that lost is a losing team, you know, they lose all their games. It doesn't matter. Or they lose many of their games. But you do have individual settings where a loss is going to stand out. Particularly, you know, a good team loses at home, they'll remember that loss. And those are the type of situations that we like to focus on. We'll be talking about more of that as the show progresses today.
Your standards tend to be rebounding and turnovers because they're not as fluky in their distributions. Shooting can have these wide, wide swings. So when we see wide swings in shooting, we want to look for that to reverse the second time around. But when we see dominance on the boards, we don't look for that to reverse. Sometimes we'll play that to continue. That's a much more stable aspect for these revenge settings. So when we get to some of the games we're going to be breaking down today, rebounding will be a little bit of an edge. But the shooting percentages, if somebody shoots 60 and their opponent shoots 40, we're more likely to expect both to reverse rather than to continue. That's one of the key pieces you can get from that first look.
Yeah, that's a great point, Dave. And again, the turnovers as well as the rebounding. A rebounding margin the first time can easily be a rebounding margin the second time. It indicates front court edge. Turnovers, similar story. If a team can't handle the basketball against the other team's pressure, you see them turn the ball over 22 times in the first meeting. They're not necessarily a good ball-handling team. They may well do it again the second time. Excellent point, Dave. And I got to make a point. What point am I going to make? We're going to be dark next Monday. That's right, show announcement. No show on Monday. We'll repeat it again tomorrow. But the reason? Not really many games to talk about. No NBA next Monday. A very, very light college card. So Dave and I are going to take the day off. We'll be back again on Tuesday of next week. But we will be taking Monday off, I believe. It's our only day off between New Year's and the end of the NBA Finals.
Actually, to check the contract,
uh-huh.
2018.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't see that the first time.
but you signed. Yeah. But anyhow, yeah, no show on Monday. And I'm not going to announce today. We're just going to tease the Wednesday before March Madness. We're going to be doing another event. And this time, it's going to be a little different. The first time we're going to be doing a live remote in front of an audience. You can be a part of that audience. If you're here in Las Vegas the Wednesday night before the tournament, we'll have details as soon as we get the I's dotted and the T's crossed. But that is coming. Again, Wednesday night before the tournament. That, you know the date, Dave? Wednesday, March
14th.
14th. We're going to be out live here in Las Vegas. Come here and visit us and come watch a show. The tournament preview show, not just any show. That's going to be, what, like an hour and a half marathon, isn't it?
It's our St. Patrick's edition of Vegas Sports Day.
On the 14th? Patty's Day is the 17th.
We're not going to be on the air on the 17th.
Oh, well, in that case, we'll be drinking throughout. Should be a fun show. Great question from Brian today, and please keep those emails coming. The address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at Vegas Sports Day, and you can get involved in the community. Lots of other sports bettors out there. There's many of you watching this show. There's many more who are involved in the forums at covers.com. You want to be a part of the discussion? covers.com/posting forum.
You've been betting college basketball for the last 10 years. You've never had a single day where you can bet Bo Ryan and Mike Krzyzewski with revenge on the same board. We're going to talk about that next in the postmortem. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
I'm Courtney Leone, this is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better, no.
Okay, guys, let's scrub up. Let's get those surgical gloves on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you the things you should be seeing and probably aren't.
Okay, we talked about revenge in the opening segment. Let's focus on two major showdowns tonight and two of the best coaches in the sport of college basketball giving a rare chance for revenge in these settings. This menacing scowl of Mike Krzyzewski tells you a lot about the passions that this game can bring. His Blue Devils suffered a rare home loss the first time around versus Florida State, a 76-73 decision when Mike Snair dropped a three-point bomb right before the final buzzer. So naturally, we know where our starting point is going to be. How does Coach K do with revenge? And especially revenge off a home loss in conference play. The problem, of course, is that it's going to be a small sample size. Duke doesn't lose a lot of home games in the ACC, and it's a very visible one. You know, the odds makers know that when he is in this role, the markets are going to look to play on Duke. It's a natural thought process. Elite team coming off, coming in revenge off a subpar showing. So we go back to the start of the 2000 college basketball season. There have only been 11 Duke ACC revenge settings, only four of them off of home losses. The numbers, Duke's 8-3 straight up, 6-5 against the spread in those ball games. But showing how unique tonight's setting actually is, boy, three of those four revenge games off of home losses came against North Carolina. The only other time this particular setting came up was versus Gary Williams and the Maryland Terrapins, and Duke lost at home. They went on the road and lost on the road in the rematch.
So where do we go now with this? Let's look inside the first game. That's the next step. Neither team ever really had any control. Duke was up by 6 at halftime. Neither team ever was up in double figures. Biggest Florida State lead was the 3-point final margin, never led by more than 3 at any time. What jumps off the page? The fact that both teams could score in the 70s without a single player reaching 20 points. That shows nice balance. They each had 4 players get into double figures. But now we talk about those shooting pendulums. They seem pretty wide in that first game. Florida State shoots 54%. Duke only shoots 39.7. So they think, okay, maybe that should reverse a little bit. Not necessarily. When we look at these defenses in ACC play, and let's take a look at this gap, shows us that maybe those pendulums weren't that wide. Florida State, number one in the ACC, allowing 38.9%. 62 block shots in those conference games. Duke only number 7 in the ACC in field goal percentage defense. 43.1, significantly worse than Florida State, only 39 block shots. So it tells us that with that home court advantage, the Duke defense still got exploited. Second half of that game, Florida State shoots 18 for 27. They were a very, very confident team because they knew they could get out physical or get physically tough with Duke. Duke doesn't have that element this year that they used to have in the past. So we don't think that shooting pendulum gap is necessarily one that reverses as you shift to the opposing venue. It might be a game where Coach K's matchups are a little difficult for the automatic revenge to take place, but the markets don't necessarily think so. We might be talking about this game again. Yeah, if you thought Coach K was mad for losing a home game, how about Bo Ryan? Not quite as menacing, but if you know Bo, you do not want that dark, straight look. If you're one of his players and you're getting that look, you did something wrong, and you better not do it again. Okay, Florida State winning at Duke was a mild surprise. Iowa winning at Wisconsin on New Year's Eve, that was a monster of a surprise. Iowa was a 17-point underdog, go into Madison and win 72-65. That makes this the biggest revenge setting from a point spread standpoint of the year. No team has been favored by more than 17, lost the game, and gets revenge this particular season. So where do we start again? Let's see how Bo Ryan does in his revenge games. Since coming to Wisconsin, 15-4 straight up, 12-7 against the spread. That's pretty good because this is a public program, like Duke. Not to that extreme, but when Bo has revenge, people see it. And also, so many of his revenge games are going to be against the cream of the Big Ten, the Ohio States, the Michigan States, the Purdue's. Little different setting now. He's got revenge against Iowa. What happened on New Year's Eve in Madison?
Well, I mean, pendulums are a big part of sports, no question about it, and a big part of revenge settings. But you have to be careful when looking at the swings of the pendulum. Sometimes sports just happen, and weird things can and do happen. And on that New Year's Eve game in Madison, that's most assuredly what happened, a huge part of the story. Wisconsin took 28 three-point shots in that ballgame. They made three. Three for 28 from the floor, from beyond the arc. Now, when you miss shots, all kinds of bad things are going to happen in other parts of your game, like Iowa outscoring Wisconsin 14-2 on fast break points. You miss shots, the other team can get out and run in transition. That's something that's certainly not lost on Bo Ryan when we look at this quote. Quote, I've never overanalyzed a game, and this one won't be the first. You've got to hit some shots. If you hit shots, it's amazing how much better your defense looks. It's never changed ever since it started in 1891. You hit some shots, and you see what happens. Now, how bad was that shooting in that ballgame? Well, in every other game Wisconsin has played this year, they've shot 37.6% from three-point range. That rates number 46 in the country, in the top 20 percentile, in the top 20% of college basketball teams. Meanwhile, Iowa only took 6 three-point shots for that entire game. They made 2 of the 6. So before we look for the shooting to reverse itself, it begs the question, why does Iowa getting 53 of their 59 shots from inside the arc and Wisconsin only 41 of 69 shots inside the arc? Iowa's getting better looks. This is where we will give a guy like Bo Ryan a little bit of credit. Well, he gets the benefit of the doubt to figure out what went wrong the first time in terms of the offensive ball movement and solve it for the second meeting.
It's a good little tip there. Sometimes you don't have to figure it out yourself. If you see something odd, rely on the good coach to get it done right. Speaking of doing it right, how good are they at TNT? The All-Star Weekend's coming up. So what's the doubleheader tonight? Filled with all-stars. We've got LeBron. We've got Dwayne Wade. We got Carmelo. We got Kobe. We got Kevin Durant. We got a bunch of all-stars coming up next as Money Time begins.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Ooh. Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
It worked yesterday, so we got to raise the roof again today. Come on, guys. It's money time. Don't give me that look. It did work yesterday. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Did you feel good when that game went into overtime?
You're just all excited because Tracy McGrady's coming up in about 2 minutes.
Oh, I can't wait to lay in T-Mac. But bottom line, did you feel good when that game went into overtime?
When that one? Of course.
That's true. We had the veteran
team. Given those teams, sure.
Sure, absolutely. But I didn't feel good. I didn't feel good about that at all. But bottom line, worked. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Miami. We're going to take our talent to South Beach. Take a look at the Heat, -9 against the Knicks this evening. Now, again, Dave was teasing before the break. You know, this is not some meaningless last game before the break. This is a showdown atmosphere in the Eastern Conference. You know, we talked about some of the Knicks' chemistry issues yesterday. And frankly, they weren't bad last night. They got a blowout win with Carmelo Anthony and Amari Stoudemire, only contributing 22 points between them. No one on the Knicks logged big minutes in that ballgame. The second half was largely garbage time. Jeremy Lin, he settled down with the turnover problems that were kind of plaguing him throughout his first few starts. Over his last two ball games, 18 assists versus only 7 turnovers. Now, big difference between the Atlanta team that the Knicks faced last night and the Miami team that they'll face tonight. I mean, the Hawks, without Joe Johnson, without Al Horford.
Who did play?
Well, they did. Some guy named McGrady got in the lineup
did
a little
play?
Bit.
They used him? Remember, he'd been complaining he wasn't getting to play enough.
He was crying that he wasn't getting playing time.
He got on the court.
He did get on the court.
How'd he do?
Well, he lasted less than 15 minutes on the floor. And during the 15 minutes that Tracy McGrady was on the floor, the 14 minutes and 45 seconds, I should say, the Atlanta Hawks -21 during that span. That's going to prorate over a course of 48 minutes. That would be a -68.3, which is unheard of for that relatively short stint. T-Mac begging for playing time. Please take me off the bench, please. T-Mac gets in the game, and the Hawks immediately didn't take one possession for Atlanta's offensive and defensive chemistry to completely break down. No, T-Mac, no more soup for you. Playing time, not perhaps your strength this year.
I got to do this every day. Until 2018, apparently. Okay, what happened last night wasn't necessarily new for the Knicks, and it's something we do need to talk about from a power rating standpoint and why tonight's step up really is a step up. Playing a weakened opponent, been a whole lot of that for New York. As we head to the All-Star break, let's take a look at how the Knicks got to 17-17. How about the schedule? Number 30 in the NBA. That's right. There are 30 teams. They played the weakest schedule. Only 12 of their games came versus winning teams. Only 5 road games all season against winning teams. Since Jeremy Lin got into the rotation, only 3 of the 11 games have been against winners. And that counts Atlanta as a winning team. The bunch they sent out there last night, those weren't winners. So the Knicks have been fortunate. But here's where the Knicks get a little bit of a break going forward. And that's why we still like them as a future book item. The schedule doesn't turn tough for a little while longer yet. Look what happens after the All-Star break. They get Tuesday off, they play Wednesday, then they don't play again until Sunday. So at a time where their concern is getting the chemistry together with all these new pieces fitting in, Mike D'Antoni said, you know, this is like having a second training camp next week. That's going to mean a lot. So by the time the Knicks play a tougher schedule, they'll be ready for that schedule. They'll get that chemistry time. Question is, are they ready tonight for the way that Miami's playing?
No kidding, Dave. I mean, this Miami Heat team, they've turned the corner. They've found their mojo. Look at the numbers. 7-0 straight up, 6-1 against the spread in their last 7 ball games, and all 7 of those wins came by a dozen points or more. The only point spread non-cover came in a game where they were laying 13.5 to Sacramento. Could only win by 12. Miami playing good basketball right now. And a lot of it has to do with shot selection. When we look at the Heat and compare their numbers this year compared to last year, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade a season ago, they were jacking up three-pointers on a consistent basis. The two of them shot 485 three-pointers in 155 games between them. This year, well, they're not relying on two mediocre three-point shooters for that element of the offense. Instead, they have Mario Chalmers, Mike Miller, and Shane Battier taking the lion's share of three-point shots. And LeBron and D-Wade taking less than half of the three-point attempts per game they were last year. So far, 75 three-point attempts between them in their 56-player games this season. Again, less than half of the long-range bombs that the Miami's two best scorers are taking than they took a season ago. So much better ball movement, much better shot selection. And again, when you're not settling for long jumpers, it really taxes a defense. And the Knicks really haven't shown yet that they can D up against this level of talent and this Miami alignment right now.
Let's go to the TNT nightcap in Oklahoma City. The host Thunder laying 6 right now over the Lakers. We broke down the Lakers setting yesterday, talking about the fact that we expected a catharsis from those little media episodes they had had. They came out and played hard against Dallas. Maybe the single most important win of the year for them, in that Kobe Bryant goes 4-for-15, 7 turnovers, only 4 assists. They win the game. That was a team win for the Lakers, something they'd been missing a little bit earlier. Bynum and Gasol combined 43 points, 23 rebounds. Now a different story, though. They really wanted that game in Dallas. That was the first time back in Dallas from that playoff humiliation. They also had a good matchup at point guard. Jason Kidd is one of the guys who's not going to blow by Derek Fisher or Steve Blake. But Kidd himself, only 2-for-6 from the field, 5 points, and only 4 assists last night in almost 34 minutes. One of his worst games of the year. Now it changes. If you're the Lakers, did you get the game you wanted, and now you're ready for the All-Star break? Do you still bring it tonight? And, oh, by the way, that point guard matchup, now they have to stay in front of Russell Westbrook, something they're not geared very well to do.
No, and this Lakers team, I mean, we've talked about it a number of times on the show. Throughout the course of the season, age, lack of depth, L.A. has had a lot of problems on the second night of back-to-back settings, particularly on the road. And we look at the numbers, you know, numbers don't lie. Back-to-back, second night on the road, L.A. 2-5 straight up, 1-6 against the point spread. Now, definitely worth noting here, this chart is going to look different from any other one that you're going to see, because we're not going to count a loss to the Clippers under these same parameters as a road loss. They were playing at the Staples Center. Yeah, it was a road game, but no, it wasn't. They were playing at home. They slept in their own beds. We don't count that here.
They slept in their own beds?
They slept in somebody's beds in L.A.
In L.A., yeah. Okay. Yeah.
of course, there was the overtime win at Utah, in which they got the win and the cover when they were -2. We're going to chart that as an ATS loss, because obviously at the end of regulation, the score was tied. L.A. did not cover that number. So, you know, this is definitely one of those type of cases where we wouldn't be surprised to see the Lakers a little bit fat and happy, satisfied with what they did last night, and content to head into the break. But, you know, Oklahoma City, I'm not so sure that that's the case. This team has not backed off the throttle at any point this season. But it is worth noting, the market's probably pricing this in the correct range, because the Lakers have only been +6 or more twice in the last 3 years. You don't see the Lakers in this point spread, in this point spread range. What happens when LA has been a 6-point or more underdog over those two instances in 3 years? 2-0 ATS? Oh, 2-0 straight up as well. LA, they've been cashing tickets in this bigger underdog role.
Up next, the West Coast Conference Tournament is going to be right down the street in Las Vegas next week. But does that tournament actually start tonight? We're going to break that down for you as Money Time switches to the college hardwoods.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's start our look at the college hardwoods tonight in Cincinnati, where the Bearcats, -1.5 against Louisville at home this evening. And it's certainly a showcase game for the Cincinnati program. National TV contest, they're going for win number 20 at home, and a chance to move into a higher seed. I mean, Cincy, they'll get a bid. The question is, are they going to go in as an 8 or 9 seed, or are they going to go in a little bit higher than that? You know, but let's go back to yesterday's discussion, and we talked about on the show a lot yesterday, these pressure settings for teams that aren't necessarily used to being in that type of environment. And Cincinnati, you know, this is a young team. It is an up-and-coming program right now, but players come out a little bit nervous, a little bit tight when they're not accustomed to this type of big game under the bright lights. It's certainly a question. And since he's done a lot right this year, but they've also had the benefit of a very soft schedule, particularly when we're talking about Big East teams. Over the course of the season, they're number 106. No other team in the Big East is lower than 68. We look at who Cincy's been beating in these Big East games to get to 500 in conference play. They've been beating the DePauls and the St. John's of the world. They have not stepped up in class particularly well.
And there is a step up in class tonight. When you're facing Louisville this time of the year, you got your hands full. We talked about this on the show before. Rick Pitino is a guy who's very good at bringing his teams along over the course of the season. He knows what it's all about. A lot of that comes from his time in the NBA. But think about this. Counting college and NBA both, it's now 1,247 career games for Pitino. You learn a lot about coaching and player development when you do that. So when we focus on Pitino is as tournament time comes in, the month of February. Let's take a look at how Pitino's done with Louisville in February games the last 6 years. About 33-9 straight up, 29-13 against the spread. The 13 times his team's been an underdog in that span, 11-2 against the spread. Now, a couple of things that are key to this underdog aspect. Number one, of course, is developing your team the right way through the course of the schedule. But number two, if you've coached that many games in your career, you understand game situations. You're down 4 with 2 minutes left. You're down 1 with 40 seconds left. You know when to foul, when not to foul. You know when to milk the clock on offense. Pitino, as good as anyone in endgame situations, largely because he's had more of them than just about anybody else.
And Cincinnati, not necessarily so good in those endgame situations. One of the key issues for the Bearcats is that free throw shooting. If they're up, milking a small lead in the last couple of minutes, Cincinnati for the season, just 64% from the charity stripe. They're a danger to miss every one-on-one that they take. They're a danger to blow a late lead as a result of that spotty free throw shooting. And it's also worth noting, you know, Cincinnati haven't placed a whole lot of teams that put a lot of pressure on the basketball. I remember a game against Xavier. Oh, they didn't do real well in that contest that ended up being, which led to the brawl at the end of the ballgame. There was a game at Marquette that was equally ugly, if not more so. So that may be a matchup problem for Cincinnati this evening. They do have one thing that works in their favor. Last year against Louisville on this floor, 63-54, Bearcats get the win. Bearcats get the cover, and that Cincinnati defense was stifling on those Louisville three-point shooters, holding them below 25% shooting for the course of the game.
Let's go to Spokane, Washington on ESPN2, the late-night affair, Brigham Young at Gonzaga. Gonzaga right now a six-point favorite. As we alluded to before the break, yeah, the West Coast Conference will be here at the Orleans in Las Vegas starting next Wednesday. Great coup to have here locally. By the way, folks, if you're going, be on the safe side, you want to bet the halftime? Might want to start heading to the sportsbook with about a minute left in the half. The game will be on TV in the sportsbook. You'll see what the halftime score is. You wait till halftime, you might be shut out. Just a little bit of travel advice there for you. But does this tournament actually start tonight? Here's the conundrum. West Coast Conference has three teams with big-time numbers. Brigham Young, 23-6. Gonzaga, 21-5. St. Mary's, 23-5. But there usually aren't three bids available from this conference. Maybe the Pac-10 being down this year puts an extra one into play. But no, if you're St. Mary's, you're pretty confident. But if you're Gonzaga and Brigham Young, you may be taking the court tonight thinking you have to win this game every bit as much as what's going to happen next week.
Yeah, what's the walk from the Orleans Arena to the sports book? Maybe about 8, 10 minutes, depending on how fast you walk. It's not a brutal walk, but yeah, you probably want to give yourself a little, just a little bit of extra time. Although, as long as you get your halftime bet down, it doesn't matter if you miss the first minute or two of the second half as you're walking back. But I don't believe there are any betting kiosks on the way. So if you're going to be in Vegas and going to the tournament, something to consider. Now, let's look back at the first meeting between these two teams. BYU led by 14 at the break and built it to 19 after intermission. They coasted home, 83-73 final, never really tested in that contest. Now, there's a couple of key points to consider from that first meeting. First, for totals watchers, those two teams scored 156 points despite neither one of them hit anything from beyond the arc. 6 of 31 from three-point range, so it wasn't one of those swings of the pendulum where all the three-point shots were dropping between them, less than 20% from beyond the arc in that ballgame. There were no scramble points late in that game where the two teams, you know, foul and three-pointer and foul and three-pointer, and you get another 20 points in the last minute and a half. That didn't happen either. The first meeting went for the 156 points all on pace alone, not on good shooting or late fouling situations. Now, we saw Noah Hartsock really outplay his counterpart, Robert Sacre. You know, 24-14 versus 11-5. But the key issue for both teams in tonight's game, and really both side and total, what's the story with Noah Hartsock this evening? Here's a quote from a BYU head coach, Dave Rose, says he's got some real soreness in that knee, but there is no structural damage. We dodged a bullet as far as the MRI is concerned. My hope is that we can get him on the floor this weekend sometime. And it's a very tough call for Rose here. BYU has a home game against Portland on Saturday that the Cougars, they can win that game. They can control that game with or without Hartsock in the lineup. But is this a game tonight that they must win for the big dance? Or do they rest him and then rest him again on Saturday and have him ready for the conference tournament next week? Without knowing Hartsock status and it's looking like a game time decision situation, it's really tough to call this one early in the day. Maybe a slight look towards the over, but nothing dramatic here. But Dave, there is a game that we're going to take, I think, a little bit of a closer look at right now, isn't there?
Let's talk about revenge having too much of an impact in the marketplace. Duke's not the favorite at Florida State, not the way these teams match up. 80 minutes on the court, the last two seasons played on each court, Florida State plus 9 on that total scoreboard. Give us Florida State as the home underdog as the sports they play. Again, a line based on public perception, not the realities of these teams. Florida State much better defensively, and this year almost every bit as good on offense. A Seminole win will be called an upset on SportsCenter. It shouldn't be.
Not here. Florida State plus the 2 of Vegas Sports Day's play of the day. That's going to wrap it up for the Thursday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you again tomorrow.